Before we begin, let's take a few moments to put our hands together to worship the searcher who searched for countless lifetimes, fulfilling his perfections one by one in order to search for the truth. The fearless one who couldn't be shaken even when he faced Mara and the Supreme One, the one who opened the doors of the Dhamma for us all to learn and understand, to comprehend, to liberate us from the shackles of samsara. So let's take a moment to worship this Tathagata by chanting the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. How is everyone doing? A sad day morning. Coming to the monastery to engage in various meritorious deeds, to listen to Dhamma, to practice, to go forwards on our path. You know, it's very, you know, we have to remember how lucky we are to be able to do all these things. And it's something that, you know, I keep reminding you, because no matter how much I tell this, you are still that one bit more luckier. Because to be able to do, to, you know, come to the monastery, to be able to make offerings to the Mahasangha, and, you know, the simple act of, because if you think about this, right? If you were to take a broom and sweep at home, how much merits do you accumulate? This much? You take the same broom, don't even sweep much, just hold the broom and just one sweep somewhere in this ground. Now, how much merits do you accumulate? Depending on what you think, depending on your intention, the merits you accumulate are endless. You know, this is why, you know, the Buddhasasana is like a fountain. No matter how much you do, how much you take, there's still more. No matter how many merits you accumulate, there is still more. Now, as I was saying, you know, as we do our merits, you know, and we learn, listen to Dhamma, and we practice, and we you know, we want to go on this path. Now, this path is what? What is the path? Because this is a question that we should ask ourselves day in, day out. What is this path and why? Why do I need to go on this path? Because if we don't have a why, then why? Then why do we do it? You know, they've always said, you know, we've learned through our entire life, start with what? Why? See, in each and every one of your heads, you all should have why. Why am I doing this? Why am I sat down? Why am I listening? Why am I doing merits? You have to ask the question why. If you don't have a good answer, let me give you a good answer. Why walk the path? Why walk the path that the Buddha laid 2,500 years ago? Now, I know most of you are, you know, people who come and listen to the Dhamma, people who know a lot of the Dhamma. Some of you may know more Dhamma than I do. But the question is, do we have the motivation to keep going forward? Because we all hope and dream that the path was a simple one. I mean, you've all heard the stories, right? Of these great, great arahants 2,500 years ago. How, you know, just a simple encounter with the Dhamma and they become, you know, sotapanna. And the next moment they become arahants. Why can't we have the same thing? Because we all hope and dream that, you know, our path is going to be simple. But a calm sea doesn't make a skilled sailor. A calm sea will never make a skilled sailor. To make a skilled sailor, the sea has to be what? Not just rough, but stormy. With gales blowing at high, with high gales, with waves as high as buildings. That's when you know you're a skilled sailor, if you can travel that. This is why life is always going to be like that. Our path isn't a straight one. Day in, day out, you'll be facing, you know, hindrances. Things that will stop you, things that will make you falter. And you need to have the motivation to say, oh, I've got this. I can do this. When there is a barrier, when there is an obstacle, you should be able to say, no, no, I've got this. I know how to do this. And if you don't, that's when you need a teacher. A teacher is always there to remind you, don't worry. Your path is not going to be simple. Your path isn't a clean, straight road. Now you can walk, you know, with your eyes closed. No, your path is one filled with obstacles. Your teacher will remind you that. And the teacher will always remind you that even though there are obstacles, you can do it. You can do it. Because if you understand the Dhamma, you can do it. So the question is, why am I walking this path? Now for each and every one of you, this question will give different answers. You know, some of you say, because, you know, because that's what I have to do. Why do you have to do it? Because I'm a Buddhist. Some of you will say that, no, I want to do this because I want to get rid of suffering. Some of you will say, you know, I'm trying to do this so I can understand the world. Each and every one of you have a different answer to the question, why? But how strong is that why? How strong is your why? Depending on how strong it is, you'll work differently. Because I can guarantee that the whys of our Anagarikas, the whys of our Anagarikas, the whys of our monks have to be what? Strong. Because no matter what happens, their whys are always strong. Because that's why they took the leap. That's why they took the leap and said, you know what? I want to dedicate my entire life to do this. So that's the thing. Why is strong? The why has to be the first thing you have to ask. Why? So why? What brings you here today? Hello, travelers. What brings you here today? What brings you here today?
Previous beliefs.
You know, each and every one of you are extremely fortunate. Whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not, you're extremely fortunate. To be face to face, you know, with the opportunity to understand the question that many people still can't answer themselves. to come face to face with a way to answer the question that many that has stumped many philosophers all through history. What's that question? The question comes in different ways, you know, the same question in different ways. But throughout history, the same question has been asked. Who am I? What is real? And question after question after question. Each of these questions have been asked throughout our entire history. Many different philosophers, scientists, and, you know, many great thinkers all through history have always tried to find the answer. But only one person sitting under the Bodhi tree truly understood the answer to these questions 2,500 years ago. Sitting under the Bodhi tree, he understood the answers to this question 2,500 years ago. And from that day, the message has been spread far and wide. Generation after generation. Until it's reached you. This is the thing, we are very fortunate. We are very fortunate to be able to be in the association of great people. Look at the people on your left and right. These people are very special. Because they also have the same determination that you have. To understand what is real. To understand who they are. To find a way to get rid of mental suffering. While people travel, you know, the seven seas. You know, when the seas aren't enough, they traveled how deep the sea is. When the oceans aren't deep enough, they look to the sky and say, how high the sky is. When the sky isn't tall enough, they say, what about space? But no one asked the questions. Well, why am I sad? Why am I angry? Why do I want to go to space? No one asked those questions. Why do I want to go to space? Why do I want to go to Mars? No, it's how can I go to Mars? How far is next star? Always looking at outside. Very rarely do we point our fingers inside and ask questions about us. We never ask the question, you know, why do I do what I do? Why am I thinking the way I'm thinking? Why do I, you know, sit down in front of the TV watching this one TV show every day? We don't ask ourselves. Instead, we think, when is the next episode? When can I start watching this episode, this series? When is this movie out? Always looking at the outside. Never pointing inside and asking about us. Who is this? Why is this? How is this? When is this? Never actually asking those questions. Because when you ask these questions, you open Pandora's box. You open Pandora's box. And out comes what? The truth. You see, the moment you ask these questions, your answers that you get will vary until it comes to one point where it's always the same. You know, throughout our lives, we really focus on one thing and one thing only. What is that? In our lives, our main focus is one thing and one thing only. What is that? Our main focus in life is me. The world revolves around the sun. No, it revolves around me. I'm there, everything around me is happening to me. The entire world happens to, you know, it's cold. Not for the penguins in you know, where? The Arctic or Antarctic, I can't remember which one. Oh, you know, it's not that it's too cold for, or it's you know, there's too, it's too dark, it's too light, it's too cold, it's too hot, for not for others. For who? For me. I mean, this makes it sound semi-selfish, right? But I want you to see it this way as well. Now, you could say, well, I care about other people's suffering. You know, when someone else is hungry, I care about it. That's why if someone is hungry, I'll give them food. But that person has to be where? That person has to be somewhere close to me. Has to be something that is something that I perceive. I don't like seeing this person hungry, therefore I give the person food. Again, it seems like though the world revolves around who? Me. Because in our lives we focus on one thing and one thing only, me. When you focus on me, one of the first questions you ask is, what? What's going to happen to me? The moment you think about who, this, the question, the next question is, what's going to happen to me? I mean, this is why we do what we do. For example, why did we go to school? You know, 10, 20, 30 years back, we went to school. Still, some people are still going to school. Why did we go to school? Because we had a question. What's going to happen to me in 5 years, in 10 years, in 15 years? What's going to happen to me? I will need a job. And you always project yourself to either the future or else, as you grow older, you seem to project yourself more to the where. You know, puta, you know, when I was your age, this is what I used to do. Why can't you be more like me? I mean, you probably, I remember, you know, if you, once you meet, I remember I once had this uncle who loves, you know, comparing himself. And he'll be like, you know, so whenever I complain and say, you know, homework's too hard, I remember he'll tell me, you know, Buddha, when I was your age, for me to go to school, I had to walk this many miles, right? I had to climb this high mountain. When you actually look at the logic of it, no, he had to just go, like, you know, very close by, but he would say, I had to walk so far, climb this high mountain, you know, trek through the valleys of mountains and go through, you know, have go through forests. Because what he does is he enjoys the what? The past. Because if you think about it, we always live either in the future or in the past. We never actually think about what we're actually doing in the moment. I mean, I think in one of our previous talks as well, we've talked about this. But, you know, if you ask yourself, why do you have a phone in your pocket? Why do you have a phone in your pocket? Because I live in the present moment. I live for now. The phone in your pocket's for what? When is it going to ring? When am I going to hear the notification that someone sent me a message? I mean, nowadays, younger generations are more and more addicted to this notification. The moment they feel that there should be a notification, they pick up the phone. No, there's no need for sound. That's the thing. There's no need for sounds, no need for vibrations. All there needs to be is what? I should be getting a message now. 9 times out of 10, there is no message. But still, there's this need to look, when will this happen? When will I get a phone call? When will I get a text? When will I get notified? You know, we are coming to this state where everyone is now getting very scared. Scared of what? There's an actual term for this. People are now becoming more and more scared of missing out. There's an actual term they've come up. It's called fear of missing out. It's called FOMO. Where people are becoming more scared that, you know, when I'm spending time doing something else, am I missing something important? You know, something else, you know, maybe my friends are doing something else. And so they're constantly on their phone, trying to live where? In the future. Or you spend living in the past. Where? Where is the best place to reminisce the past? You know, back in the past, you know, back before, you know, we had good phones and whatnot. The way we reminisce the past was when? How? When someone comes to our home, what do we take out first? When someone comes to our home, when you have visitors, what's the first thing you take out? The wedding album. And you say, you know, this is with my wedding. You know, this is where I got married. This is my first child. Look, he's walking. Where we reminisce the what? The past. Nowadays, we don't need albums, right? Because we've got hundreds of albums. Where? In the phone. You've got hundreds of albums in the phone. All you have to do is pick up the phone, you know, click on gallery, and then you have picture after picture after picture. Where you can live in the past. Because we forget, though, you know, what is truly happening? We only have this moment. We only have now. We don't have a future, and the past is already gone. What we have is a now. Now, how big is this now? How big is now? Or how long is now? To answer this question, we have to understand, what do we use to perceive the world? We use the mind. And the mind uses what? Thoughts. So how long is now? Now is just one thought. When one thought happens, that's our now. However, we, in that one thought, we try to project ourselves in the past and the future to get this massive feeling. For example, most of you are now wearing red lanyards, right? What does that mean? Dakineyo. Dakineyo Mahapuja. Meaning what? In this mind, you are also trying to live where? In the future, you know. In Dakineyo, you know, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to offer this. I'm going to do this. You know, maybe I'll get a chance to offer Pirikara to who? Maybe to Guru Handru. And maybe if Aman Sanai Khan is there as well. Maybe I'll be able to offer it to him as well. And now you're living where? In the present moment. You know, thinking about what I'm hearing tonight, right now. No, we're living in the future. You know. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do that. And then when I go home, on my journey home, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do. I mean, I'm not. So, let me re-emphasize. I'm not against planning. Planning is one thing. But living is another. When you plan, you're thinking about what you're going to do, what's going to happen, what maybe will happen in the future. But when you live in the future, you know, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go do this, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this. And in every moment you think about that, you are actually doing that. For example, if I asked you to remember the last time you had cake. Now let's take a chocolate cake, because we all have chocolate cake. It's the one example that, you know, Guru Hamaru, Amasanai Gadru, and everyone uses chocolate cake. So let's use chocolate cake now. When I say chocolate cake, the taste of chocolate cake comes to you, right? the taste of, you know, if I say, you know, chocolate cake, don't you know the taste of chocolate cake? Don't you also remember the last time you had a really good slice of chocolate cake? Some yes, some no. Depending on how much you like chocolate cake, the answer will vary. Those who are chocolate fanatics will remember exactly the shop that they bought the chocolate cake from that was such a good shop. So next time they want chocolate cake, they'll go exactly to what shop? That shop. Because you remember. But not only remember, you live. You take that memory and not just remember, but you relive that memory. Because it's a memory that you enjoyed. It's a memory that you loved. And therefore, you relive in that memory and you think, wow, you know, that chocolate cake was amazing. That's why when I said chocolate cake, some of you had a smile on your faces. Because if it was a memory, then, okay, chocolate cake. But no, it's more than a memory. What is it? It's an experience. It's an experience I experience at this moment, but of a past. And do you think an arahant, right, when you say chocolate cake, will start smiling and think about, oh, you know, I remember when I was, you know, this here, when I went to this shop, I had a chocolate cake and that was such a good chocolate cake. Do you think an arahant will feel that? For an arahant, a memory is what? A memory. See, I want to focus this on more on, I want to almost focus this on something slightly different. Because this is something that I think lots of us will go through, as well as it's a problem that the more you think about this, the more strange it becomes. And it's about sleep. Now, each and every one of us slept last night, right? Right? Some of you are nodding, some of you aren't nodding. That's making me question, did you or did you not? I didn't ask number of hours, because some of you will vary. Some of you say, I've slept 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. How many hours you slept? That's not the question. You slept last night, right? No, here's a good question. The number of hours that you slept last night, does it affect this moment? Does it affect this moment? The number of hours you slept last night, does it or does it not affect this moment? Yes, Swaminas, I'm very tired, you know, I only slept only 2 hours yesterday, you know, I had to come, you know, wake up 4 a.m. to come here, and therefore I had only, you know, 2-3 hours of rest. Does it affect it? You know, it's, well, of course it does, doesn't it? If I haven't had a good night's rest, that means, you know, right now I'm going to be very tired. What is going to be tired? What is going to be tired? Is the mind tired? Is the mind tired? When you don't have enough sleep, is the mind tired? Here's a good question. Let's say something really, let's say, you know, you've only had, for some reason, you've only had 2 or 3 hours of sleep. But the next moment, when the next day was very hectic. Hectic in the sense that, you know, something really big happened. For example, you know, someone had an accident. And, you know, they had to be driven to the hospital. As you are driving, are you going to start falling asleep when something really big has happened? No, because in that moment, what are you doing? You're just focused on the one task, which is what? Driving this person to the hospital. Therefore, you know, tiredness, physically you feel tired. Mentally, you are alert. Mentally, you're not for you. You are very alert, not going to ever, you know, close your eyes because why? You have a task to do. Because actually, if you think about it, the number of hours you slept last night doesn't affect this moment mentally. Physically, yes. Physically, your body doesn't have enough energy. However, your mind loves doing this. What is it? Taking bodily problems or problems that's not directly affecting it and making it mental. For example, I only slept for 4 hours last night. I normally take 7 hours. I'm going to catch up that 3 hours sometime, you know, at noon after having lunch. And therefore, your mind makes this feeling that I must catch this up, and therefore I am now very tired. And it projects itself in the future that, you know, I've only had this much. So I'm going to give myself an excuse to do what? We do the same thing with hunger as well. Do you remember the last time you were extremely busy? Or the last time you were watching a very good TV show or a movie? You know, when you are very busy, do you remember to eat? Do you remember to eat? Like when you're very busy? I remember, you know, many years back, you know, I had to pull on all night to do something, you know, helping, you know, with some sort of thing. I would remember the next day thinking, did I have dinner that night? And I'd be like, no, I hadn't. I hadn't even remembered. Was I hungry? No, because I was focused on what? Because remember, sleep and hunger are both physical things. Now, this is not saying, you know, sleep and hunger are not real. You know, you have to sleep. Don't worry. I'm not going to say, you know, sleep only 2 hours like the Buddha and, you know, live the rest of your life. No, I'm saying have your 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours. How many hours you rest? But remember, this is a bodily feeling. Hunger is also what? A bodily feeling. See, when you are seeing, are you hungry? When you are hearing, are you hungry? When you are thinking, are you hungry? No, but when the mind arises with what? With a physical, a physical feeling mind, then it feels what? Oh, I'm hungry. Because again, when we project into the future thinking, okay, I'm hungry. When am I going to eat next? I can't remember the actual number, but I remember one day searching for it. And I remember it's over. Do you know how much electricity we waste? Just by opening the fridge. Think about it. The number of times we actually open the fridge for, you know, use, you know, not because we're hungry, but because we just feel peckish. You've had those days, right? Where you know there's something good in the fridge, right? And you open it and, you know, you just look at it and you close it again. I remember once because we've all lived these times, right? When, you know, you've bought, you had, say, something very nice the last night, there's leftovers. You had a takeaway from a good restaurant and you've got leftovers. What do? We put it in the fridge. And then every time you walk past the fridge, what do you do? What do you do? That's like, I think, 2 bites hungry. Open the fridge, take it, close the fridge. I remember there used to be a time when my mother banned me from opening a fridge. Like, no, you cannot open the fridge without my permission. Unfortunately, Amma's not in the kitchen 24/7, so, you know, there's a time where you can go and open the fridge and take stuff. But, you know, I remember there'll be a time where Amma says, you know, you can't open the fridge without my permission. Yes, permission. But, you know, that's the thing. You know, I think, you know, as on average, a person will waste, you know, kilowatts of electricity because we open the fridge for no reason whatsoever. Just because, you know, you think, you know, am I hungry? Maybe a little. You know, we, you know, when you think about this, right, our mind tricks us so often. Our mind loves tricking us. You know, it's almost like a hobby the mind has, you know, trying to trick us continuously. The funny thing is, those of you who know will know the mind itself is us, right? So how does it trick itself? This is how. When you have ignorance and attachment, it tricks itself. So, you know, when you know that there is food coming up, you automatically feel what? Hungry. And that's why, you know, you can condition people. For example, we are all conditioned. Do you remember, the best way to explain this is, do you remember, you know, going to school, the bell that signals for lunch, the amount of joy that bell gave you, do you remember that? The amount of joy that bell gave you just because it's signaling what? Lunchtime. Or at least signaling, let's go home now. The amount of joy came from what? The mind tricks itself thinking, you know what, finally I get to do something. But really, you know, it's just a sound that the mind perceives. But the mind tricks itself saying that, you know, this is going to be something good. I'm finally will be able to, you know, do what I want to do next. For example, you know, let's say someone starts drumming. You know, our amazing drum team starts drumming. Then, you know, automatically you think, you know what? Dakineyo Mahapuja. You know, this great offering, finally, you know, I'll be able to do something. And that sound will make you remember something in the future and enjoy in this moment. And you think that enjoyment comes from what? You know, that event. That sound. And the mind itself tricks it, thinking that, you know, the future is happening. The future will happen. But unfortunately, you can only do what? You can only live in this moment. That's why, you know, a person can live, or, you know, you can stay for hours and hours just thinking about your future, can't you? Okay, you know, everyone, let's take 5 minutes. Huh? I want you to think about what your future will be. What you're going to do in the future. What are you going to do today, tomorrow, day after? And you could probably spend not 5 minutes, but, you know, 5 hours just thinking about the future, because it's very nice. Who here, in you know, imagines that they're going to have an accident in the future? Anyone thinking, you know, when I reach this age, I'm going to get a cancer? Anyone? No, because when we project ourselves in the future, we take the best parts. You know, next year, I'm going to plan to go to X place, and then I'm going to do Y. I'm going to be with Z. And you're planning a perfect future, and you project it. This is why, you know, you get really mad when it doesn't happen. You know, when you plan something, those of you who are, you know, excellent planners are also excellent warriors, are also excellent criers. Why is that? You plan. Planning is not the issue. You plan. Then you worry. Why are you worrying? Will it go the way I plan? And then you are also what? Excellent? Criers. Why did this not happen this way? Why couldn't it happen this way? For example, have you never planned a conversation before it happens? Huh? You're going to meet someone. Let's say you're going to meet your boss. Don't you plan your conversation before it happens? You know, I'm going to go to my boss and say, you know, I need a pay rise, and then this, my boss is going to say this or something like this, and I'm going to have to say this. And you plan that conversation. Then you worry. You know, I used to be a person that just does this all the time. I used to be a person who really doesn't like, going and talking to a teacher about anything, you know, except a question that I have in the lesson. But let's say I had to ask the teacher, you know, did you mark the homework? Hated it. Because why? Before I go meet the teacher, what am I doing? I'm going to have to ask like this. How am I going to ask? How is the best way to ask? Did you mark the homework? Now, that sounds a bit too direct. Were you able to mark the homework? Okay, that sounds better. Okay, let's ask this. But what happens if she says yes? Then what am I going to say? And you start planning, or, you know, let's say you're meeting someone important. Do you plan out conversations? If you do, why? Great planners are great warriors. No, not warriors as in war, but people who worry. Oh, technically they are warriors in an aspect, in a way. Fighting for their plan. So yeah, great planners are great warriors and great warriors. And eventually great criers. Because the world doesn't work the way we want it. The world never worked the way we wanted, does it? When was the last time the world worked the way you wanted? When was the last time the world worked the way you wanted? You know, yes, you know, well, you can say, well, I came here, didn't I? I wanted to come here, I came here. So the world did work the way I wanted. But if you actually think about it, no, it didn't. No, it didn't. Did the car work or the van work or the bus work because you wanted it to work? No, we all know that it's only because the causes come together, but yet you still feel what? I came to the monastery because I wanted it. Because why? The world revolves around who? Me. I came to the monastery because I wanted to, because, you know, I get to do everything. The world revolves around who? Me. You know, this is why, you know, you always have this feeling that, you know, everything, even though, no matter how much, see, this is why the understanding of the Dhamma isn't something that happens overnight. Well, the understanding might, but the actual comprehension of it is not something that happens overnight. The actual true understanding doesn't happen overnight. Because why? Because you all know. You all know that the world is cause and effect. You all know when the causes come together, you give rise to the effect. But yet you still think that I came here and because I wanted to. This is why your journey is not a simple one. It's not, I'm going to listen to a sermon and I'm going to, you know, sit down and I'm going to understand everything. No, your journey is a journey. It's a journey taken one step at a time, one moment at a time. You can't skip. You know how sometimes when you watch a movie and you don't like a part, you can skip parts? Unfortunately, with our journey, there is no skip button. You can't skip boring parts or skip, you know, scary parts. No, you're going to have to live each moment, and you have to be able to put the Dhamma that you understand into practice. That's why, you know, a calm sea will never make a skilled sailor. Your understanding can only be tested when life gives you all the hardships. When you feel that everything is happening to who? Me. That's when you go through hardships. That's when the Dhamma needs to be practiced. That's when you have to put whatever you understand into play. That's when anicca, dukkha, anatta, right? You know, the three weapons that we hold have to be put in. So come back to where we started. Why? All of you should have a why in our heads. All of you should wake up with a why in your heads. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I thinking what I'm thinking? Why am I feeling what I'm feeling? If you don't have the why in your head, and if you don't have the why am I here? Why am I trying to understand the Dhamma? Why am I trying to practice the Dhamma? If you don't have a why, then, you know, the path that you're going to take is has a fault. Because to be able to put the Dhamma into practice, you need to have a good why. You know, I would like you all to think of a scenario. Well, think of a scenario and let's see if let's see if we can do something about it. So, let's take the scenario of anger is a good emotion. It's a very good emotion. But, you know, sometimes we don't get angry. Because anger is an emotion that we know is wrong. Right? We know anger is wrong. And therefore, we know when we're angry that this is a time. So, why am I practicing? Because anger is a bad emotion. Anger, it feels really bad. So you know why, and therefore you practice. Fear? Fear is also a very strong emotion. But one emotion is there. It's also a strong emotion. But we don't like thinking about it. What is that? Disgust. Because we don't like thinking about it. Think about this, right? In our lives, there are things that we like, things that we don't like. Things that we like, we want to keep near us. The things we don't like, we don't want to separate. But in this set of don't like, there are things that make us feel, eesh, don't like that. I don't like that. I want to avoid that. I really want to, you know, I don't really want to associate that. Nah. Because you feel what? Disgust. And so, you know, let's just take an example. The other day I was talking with one of our children from our Noble Hearts, and this child is, there are two children. One of them is absolutely terrified of frogs. The other one, whenever he sees a frog, cannot stand still, has to go and grab the frog. Right? Noble Hearts, you know, this is how it is, right? No, it's funny because, you know, Have you seen frogs? Okay. Now I would like you to... Have you seen tree frogs? Just show of hands. Hands up if you've not seen a frog in your life. If you haven't, you don't live in Sri Lanka. Put your hand up if you've not seen a tree frog. Okay. So let me describe to you what a tree frog looks like. It's very, I don't know, how you describe it. It's semi-big. I mean, tree frogs, I've seen tree frogs like at least this. Maybe not this size. At least this size. Sticks on the walls. Very skinny. Very skinny legs. With their hands on the wall. But one thing that disgusts most people is what? More than it jumped, that's scared, but disgusts most people is what? It looks slimy. he looks slimy. And also there's the fear that he's gonna jump onto you, and you know, people say if he jumped onto you, they're very good at sticking. Because I think it's maybe because of the slime or other things, they are very good at sticking onto things. So if once it sticks onto you, you know, one part of you is terrified, right? There's a frog on you. The other part is like, I can't remove it because it's slimy, right? And so you come to this conundrum, like, how am I going to get this off without touching it? So normally you take some sort of stick or something else and try to pry it off. Now here's the thing, like, why are we disgusted? Because it's slimy. What part of slime disgusts us? What part of slime is actually disgusting? So I was talking to this child. This child is very small. So I don't think he could actually understand this. But I want you to understand this, because it's an actual problem. Because, you know, in Sri Lanka, you go somewhere and you will somehow see a tree frog somewhere on a wall. Right? And I've known lots of people, adults as well, not just children, who, if there's a tree frog, cannot stay in that place without taking a broom and removing it. Is this idea of slime, why is this slime creature something that we disgust, that we feel disgusted by? Because what we have to, because the moment you see these, see, the moment you feel disgusted, do you stay and you start practicing? Do you think, you know, look at the anichidukka, not the nature of the frog? Or do you think, okay, let's get this broom and gently remove the frog away, because we don't harm. What is our first instinct? Disgust, remove. If it's disgusting, remove. We never actually think, we don't think about why. Why do I feel this to be disgusting? What part of it's actually, you know, For example, the frog is, you know, most of us haven't touched frogs. We've seen them, haven't touched them. What do you think the frog feels like though? Slippery, cold. Like, you know, the sliminess will stick on me, therefore I don't want to touch it. Now, these are all feelings that we get before you've even interacted with it. Before you even interact with it, you automatically get this feeling that this is what it's like. And because you think that, you know, sliminess is not a good thing, you say, reject, remove. But remember, ladies and gentlemen, just remember that what is a frog? What is a frog? A frog is a body. A body of what? Is a body of causes. The body of causes that come together to give rise to an effect that we perceive to be what? A frog. Now here's the question. Before you touch the frog, is the frog slimy? Before you touch the frog, is the frog slimy? In our minds, of course, it's very slimy. The slime is dripping off the frog, and therefore we think, no. But before we touch it, is the frog slimy? You have no idea. Your mind creates it. Your mind thinks, well, if it looks like this, then It should be. If it looks like this, it should be what? Cold. It should be slimy. It should be disgusting. But that's something that your mind creates. Once you've touched it, then you can say, oh, yes, it's slimy, it's disgusting, it's cold. But before, you can't say that. Because, well, you know, even if you were to touch it, what are you actually touching? Slime. What are you actually touching? What can your body actually feel? What can your body actually feel? Temperature? Pressure? And how hard or soft something is. So, let's say, you know, our Anagarik's at the back. Can we bring out our frog? Oh, no, don't worry. Don't worry. No. You know. I'm not going to let you touch a frog. Don't worry. No, I don't have a frog either. You know. We could get one. I mean, you can probably just go outside here and find 2-3 frogs. And we'll let them loose and let you practice your path here. But the thing is, you know, if you ask yourself, you know, that's still a mental perception that you have. That mental perception isn't what's actually there. If you really think about it, the frog, the idea of a frog being there, or the sliminess of a frog, is a mental perception. I mean, there is something there. Causes coming together to give rise to effect. But that idea of this is a slimy, this is a disgusting, this is a, you know, sticky. It's sticky. So for example, if you ever touched a frog, you realize frogs are not what? They're not sticky. But you look at it and you think, oh, it's very sticky. I mean, their hands are, but their back isn't. How do I know? The small boy who loves frogs came up and gave me a frog and was like, like, I was doing something completely different. And he's like, Sauna, I said, like, here. What am I supposed to do, you know? Great, thank you very much. I'll put the frog to a side now. But then next to me was who? The boy who's actually terrified, sees the frog, starts screaming, and starts running the opposite direction. See, whether we like something, whether we don't like something, these are all just mental perceptions that we have. Because, you know, the frog is also what? A mental perception. The causes coming together to give rise to an effect. But the idea of a frog that is slimy is what? A mental perception. The idea that this is a hard red pen is also what? A mental perception. I mean, of course, there's something here. I mean, it's you who's made this idea that this is a red hard pen. So if I was able to bend this by accident, and you think, oh, it's now bendy. It can't be bendy. I mean, it should be hard. Or if I start writing, and instead of writing in red, it writes in blue. Then you think, that's wrong. Can't be, because it's a red pen. But that's your perception, not what's out here. So, you know, if you think about what is actually disgusting, disgust is a feeling that your own mind makes when it thinks that something isn't something that I like. Instead, it's going to give me a bad feeling. It's something that will give rise to a bad feeling. For example, do you remember when you were younger? Right, when you were a small baby or a small toddler, and your parents had to force you to eat melum or some sort of like salad. You don't like it and you feel disgusted by it. I mean, if ever you get to, you know, feed a child, right, the one thing that they do not like to eat is the what? I mean, there are exceptions, I do know, right? But majority children don't like eating it. They feel what? Disgusted. Yee. I remember I used to tell Amma, right, my mother, like, Amma, I'm not a cow, I don't eat grass. Amma says what? Well, that's what you think. You are. And it's something that makes us feels it makes us feel disgusted. Why does it make us feel disgusted? It's because it gives rise to a feeling, a perception that I don't like. I really don't like. But remember, that's a mental perception, a perception the mind feels, not what's really there. It's very bitter. Well, bitterness is not something that your mind dislikes. If bitterness is something that the mind dislikes, then why do people drink coffee? If it's sour that the mind dislikes, then why do we add lemon to our food? No, it's not the what it is. It's the perception that this is going to be like this. That this is going to be bitter, this is going to be slimy, this is going to be like this. And we forget that it's a mental perception. Because what is a frog? A frog is a body. Body of what? Body of causes. Now, do we have to go into detail and say, the frog has two lungs, right? Has a heart, has a, its own internal organs and got skin and, got these pores that give out. Do we have to go into lots of detail? Going into detail is very useful. To understand what? Cause and effect nature. The nature of cause and effect. But to get rid of disgust, do you have to go into so much detail? No, all you have to understand is what? It's causes that come together. That the sliminess of the frog is what? Mental perception. Let's take another example. Something that I remember until I became a monk, I couldn't do. And that was use public toilet, including school toilets. I remember, and Amma used to joke about this as well. I would have only have used the school toilet, I think, twice in my entire schooling career, just twice. Because I'd wait somehow until I get home, because I did not like it. Because why? It's disgusting. Because it smells bad. Because, lots of people use it or whatnot. But ladies and gentlemen, think. Think. Use your wisdom to think. Because once you start thinking, the problem goes away. Once you start thinking, not feeling, once you start thinking, because once you start feeling, you feel, don't like it, let me escape from it, let me use something else. But once you start thinking, the problem actually disappears. Because when you ask the question, well, how does this differ? How does it differ? What is a toilet? A body of causes. No matter where, whether you are using a toilet from, I don't know, you go to a palace and you're using a palace toilet, or whether you're using a toilet from, say, a public restroom. They're both what? Causes coming together to give rise to an effect. Causes come together to give rise to an effect. So it doesn't matter, actually, if you think about it doesn't matter where, for as long as you're able to do what you need to do. Trust me when I say this, until I became a monk, I could not use a public restroom. Only once I understood, well, causes come together to give rise to an effect here, causes give rise to an effect here, then what is the difference here? Difference is, Mental perception. Hundreds of people use it. Who knows what they're doing? You know, it smells so bad. You know, but home one, only just me and my family, and that's it. And, you know, it's clean. You know, if you think about it, a public restroom probably gets cleaned more commonly than the toilet at home. But yet you think that this is more, you know, dirty, disgusting, which is all what a mental perception. Now, I'm not talking, so this is about mental perception. Now, there are issues. So don't go around and saying that, you know, public restrooms are, I'm not saying that they're very clean and nice and all this stuff. I mean, you have to be worried, you have to be careful with bacteria and all that stuff. So be careful. But understand that this disgust that you feel is what? The disgust you feel is what? A mental perception. That comes from? Ignorance and attachment. We won't go through the process because we don't have enough time today. But, you know, I want you to focus on disgust. Because it's an emotion that we don't think of because we don't like it. Disgust, no. We always try to avoid. We don't actually take a moment to think about it. Anyone here disgusted with a chocolate cake? Let's use a different example. We use chocolate cake too often. I don't know, what example? What other examples are there? What other food are there except chocolate cake? You know. Okay, let's take ice cream. Well, let's take something. Let's take a hard food, so something that we can chew. I know. After Gurudev the seventh day, what do we get? The world famous, you know, world renowned roti. Anyone here, you know, when you get a food, are you disgusted? We don't, right? We don't feel disgusted when we see food on a plate. We don't feel disgusted. However, see, once someone else has touched it, now, when someone who's not in your family has touched it, because family, you know, you think a family is okay, but someone who's not part of family or not part of friends, when they touch it, you think, what's worse is, once you've taken it, eaten it, and for some reasons come back out, now what? Now disgust increases. If that comes from someone else now, disgust increases. But it's still what? The same thing. I mean, technically, don't do this, please. But technically, you know, You eating something, and let's say you're eating this roti, and let's say you take it back out after, you know, chewing it. You have roti and then you have the chewed roti. You feel a massive difference between them, right? Now this is good, this is okay, but this is what? Do I have to put it back in my mouth? When it's yours, I mean, the difference is that it's just grounded, mixed with saliva, your own saliva, that's in your mouth already. If you're disgusted, you have to be disgusted with yourself here. But yet, you know, you feel that this is good, but this is disgusting. But in reality, both of these are what? Both of these are what? Causes coming together to give rise to an effect. Agreed. But more importantly, these are both what? Mental perceptions. Just imagine, right? Instead of giving you roti, right? We give roti blended. Why? To make your lives easier. Now you don't need to rip it and chew. Instead, you can take a straw and drink it. But that idea itself is what? We mix the... You have bananas as well, right? Roti and banana? We mix the banana as well with it. No, sorry, no, sir, please. We're making your life easier because, you know, you have to peel the banana, you have to eat, you know, peel the banana, you have to rip off the roti, and you have to eat it. So, you know, we're just making your lives easier. Instead, we're just taking all the roti, we're taking all the bananas. Don't worry, we'll remove the peels and all the what do you call it? The brown and black stuff of everything, and we'll blend it. And instead of giving you a roti, we'll give you a spoon and a cup. And maybe, if you're lucky, a straw. But yeah, it feels different. It feels weird. It feels, Roti and roti juice. Roti smoothie. It feels different. This one feels... This one, that's okay. I can manage that. This one, I don't think it'll go down my throat. It's not going. But technically, roti and roti smoothie are basically the same thing, aren't they? The only difference is that it's just a different arrangement of its causes. One of them is in a solid state, the other one is in a liquid state. That's the only difference. But yeah, you feel a massive difference between them. You think one of them is good, one of them is bad. Disgusting. That's why the moment you start thinking, what happens? The moment you start thinking, what happens? You start to, actually, it's okay. I mean, you think about it. If you had a roti smoothie, you can go home faster, can't you? Because now you don't need to spend time eating, you know. You can just have it and start sipping on it while driving home. Now, if we put it into one of those travel mugs, well, you can take it all the way home and drink it at home as well if you wanted to. Instead of trying to pack it into a box or I don't know how. See, I don't know what happens after the seventh. You see, disgust is a feeling that once you start thinking about it, it no longer becomes disgusting. Because you understand what it truly is, that it just causes manifesting in a certain way. Whether it's roti, a roti smoothie, or whether it's a half-eaten roti. Whether the banana is perfect, or the banana is slightly brown. Slightly. Even then, you have a different feeling. Because disgust is a mental perception. Nothing in this world is actually disgusting. Everything in this world is perfect the way it is. Why is it perfect? Because causes came together to give rise to the effect. It's perfect. How it is, it's perfect. There's no part of it disgusting. I mean, think about it. You wake up in the morning and you look at yourself in the mirror. Are you disgusted? No. Because you realize that that's, how it is. Because that's how the causes come together to give rise to the effect. There's nothing disgusting about it. That's just nature. But yet you think, no. This and this. This is good, this is bad. These are things that I like. These are things I don't like. I like this, don't like that. See, the more you think about it, the more you realize that disgust is just a feeling, a mental perception. So the next time you see a frog, what should you do? Have the broom at hand, right? But think, why do I feel disgusted? Have the broom at hand, don't worry. Keep the broom, right? get ready to sweep it away. But before you sweep it away, just think, why do I feel disgusted? That's a body. Body of causes. Causes come together to give rise to an effect. Why should I feel disgusted? Next time you walk along the street and you see, you know, you see something that you don't want to see on the floor. Instead of closing your eye and walking around it, ask yourself, why do I feel disgusted? I mean, don't stop and stare, right? People will think you're strange. especially if there's something that conventionally people don't like to look at, don't stop and stare, but actually while you're walking, think, why do I feel disgusted? If someone asked you to pick it up, would you be able to? Think about this, right? When you're walking on the street and you see litter on the floor, why do we feel disgusted to pick it up and put it into the bin? If we don't feel disgust, think about how much cleaner our streets will be. Think about how much cleaner the streets will be. But no, we feel this sense of, don't like that. So we leave it to what? Leave it for someone whose job it is to pick it up. Just think about how cleaner places will be. If we all just, you know, remove disgust from our mind, you can pick up litter and put it into its respectful place. I don't know how it works in Sri Lanka, but you know, in other countries you have a recycling system where, you know, at homes you have, you know, a bin and a recycling bin. Sometimes in the bin you put something you can recycle. But you feel this disgust to pick it up and put it back into the recycling bin because it's been in the bin. So you feel this disgust to pick it up, something that you just put in because it's gone into the bin. Now you let it be and let it go into a landfill site and, you know, let it be there when it could have been recycled. You know, disgust stops us from even associating others. Just because you think that it's disgusting, it stops us from giving your association, because your association is special. Your association is special because why? You all have one thing in mind. You all have the determination, the will to do what? To attain Nibbana. But yet, if you can't associate someone because you think they're disgusting, it's disgusting, I don't like that, then you're hindering, aren't you? You're hindering someone else. See, just imagine a world this is wishful thinking, where everyone doesn't have disgust. That's wishful thinking. But imagine if you don't have disgust, how different your world will be. Which world? My world. My world. No, the world that's around you. How different that will be. All because of what? All because you no longer feel disgust. So like I said, the next time, you know, you see that frog, ask yourself, why do I feel disgust? The next time, you know, you see something that makes you feel disgusted, ask yourself, why? And understand, play your cards. It's a body of causes. It's mental perception. What's the difference? And disgust goes out the door. And you're able to remove it. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not saying if there's a frog on your wall, don't remove it. Because who knows, you know, people say that it might be venomous or whatnot, I don't know. So do remove it. But don't remove it out of disgust. Remove it because it's your responsibility to keep a home. That's why, you know, it's not saying, you know, let nature come into your house and live in the house. So, you know, you have a tiger at home and you got monkeys also living at home. Technically, yes. But besides the point, you're not saying, you know, let nature come in and, you know, explore your house and then go leave when they want. No, I mean, upkeep your house. If you have a house, you have to keep it clean and tidy and, you know, stop animals from coming in and whatnot. But more importantly, I'm talking about, you know, disgust. I'm talking about the emotional disgust. So please, if you do see cobwebs, you know, don't think, oh, cobwebs, you know, let the spider live, you know, in our house. You know, remove the cobweb. It's do it with the idea of removing, not hurting it, but keeping the place clean. But don't be, spiders don't like spiders. You know, let me catch all the spiders and, you know, let's have a protest against spiders. Or go away, spiders. Don't like spiders. Go away, spiders. No, I mean, you don't need to go that far. Just need to get rid of disgust. Just need to get rid of ignorance and attachment. And then you're able to live life as it is. So disgust. Tackle disgust. Use what you can to tackle against disgust. And win your war against disgust by just thinking. I mean, that's pretty fun, isn't it? Like, you can win a war by just thinking. You know, nowadays, you know, wars are such a massive topic. You know, many people dying. In our wars, you know, our wars, all you have to do is think about it and the war's over. You feel disgust, you think about it, disgust is gone, war's finished. You feel angry, you think about it, anger's gone, the war's over. Well, you have to just think. That's the thing, you know, you don't need to change anything. I think that's the one thing that people get so, you know, stuck up about, that, you know, I have to change, I have to change, I have to change. There is no need to change absolutely anything. Only thing you'll change is your thinking, the way you think about it. The way you think about it. That's all you have to do, change that. And once you've changed that, everything else falls into place. Everything else just falls X, Y, Z, and everything else falls into place. Just stop, just change the way you think about it. Instead of thinking about how can I remove it, think about why. That's why the question why is such a very important question. Why? If you keep asking that, you'll go far. Far on the journey. So like I said, right, have these in your mind, practice. Always start with why. Always start with why. The more you can answer the question, why do I feel what I feel? The further you go. And yes, we have Dakini today. But live in this moment. Because you can't live in the future. You can't live in the past. Live in this moment. So I mean, you can say that, but I can't stop it. That's okay. Just think. Think about it. Okay. Let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, Lizundharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, Let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be and receive the Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend the Dhamma. As all take my own transfer merits that we require to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all the chief prelates of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. It's also taking my chance and merits to Guru Sananse, as well as the monks resident at the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great effort to spread the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby translating the sermon, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who, for sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, alms, and frozen medicines, as well as those who pass in their know-hows and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, friends, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, to all those who have helped us, supported us as this does in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental illness. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily Sakadeva, as well as humans, gods and deities who committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that have been friends of home to us in this long journey in Sansara. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who have helped us, support, assist us in any way they could. As also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the world be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends of family to us in this long journey in Sansara. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to them. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and the blessing of all the merits acquired throughout the day. We have been a witness event to many hundreds of thousands of Aradhinvanses, Aradhmahinvanses in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success, become an Aradhinvanse or an Aradhmahinvanse in this very life, in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing never chip a be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnen mitetnva Dvesha ginnen mitetnva Moha ginnen mitetnva Nibbhana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Nibbhana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana param sukhayin sukita taravitva. Nibbana param sukhayin sukita taravitva. Nibbana param sukhayin sukita taravitva. Raga ghini niveva, dvesha ghini niveva, moha ghini niveva, nivansapa labeva, nivansapa labeva. Nivan sepa lebeva. Tanrangi, Susi Ananta Mahogan Billin, Sir Loka Sil Satyam, Nibbana Paramisukhayin, Sukhataravitva.